Members, I'll call for the K-12 Education Finance meeting. We don't have a quorum, so we're not through the minutes yet. We will, I did want to remind the members that are present in your packets. We're dealing with school lunches today, a lot of food bills, and there is some informational packets for you in your packet on the National School Lunch Program, a spreadsheet for school lunches fiscal year 2008. So, having said that, we'll move to House File 779, Representative Rukavina's bill. And Representative Rukavina, I'm going to move that House File 779 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Finance Bill. So, Representative Rukavina, pleasure to have you here in the K-12 Finance Committee. Could you please tell us about your bill?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, it's a pleasure always to come in front of the Education Finance Committee. And let me just say that I don't know, I know nothing about this bill. But my constituent, who Ms. Polly Podkesker, is a good friend of mine, her husband's a good friend of mine. Polly has been around the Capitol for as long as I have been, I think, dealing with school nutrition. And she approached Senator Thomasoni and myself late or this fall and told us that she thought that there was a part, a section in dealing with school lunch programs that and food management programs that she thinks could be causing, could cause some problems for a lot of school districts across the state of Minnesota here in the future, in near future. Polly runs a company called INAC, which I just knew it as INAC, but I found out what it stood for from her husband last night. Innovative Nutrition for Arrowhead Counties. She serves the food for most of the school districts across the Iron Range. So with that, members, I'll just introduce Ms. Podkesker, and she can tell you her concerns about what's currently in law.
Ms. Podkesker, welcome to the committee, and if you'll just please introduce yourself for the tape and the committee, and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Thomasoni.
Hold on.
Chair, table the bill. Would you table the bill, please? I've known her twice as long as Thomasoni.
I don't know why Senator Thomasoni was on my mind just now. Okay, anyway,
been misfired, so that's okay. That's just quite a compliment.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Rukavina, who I do know and have known my entire life. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Polly Podkesker. I direct the food and nutrition program in Grand Rapids for the Grand Rapids Public Schools, where I am a public employee. I am employed by Grand Rapids Public Schools. I serve as their dietitian food service director. I also wear another hat, and that is that I organize and own INAC, a food service management contract company. And that company is pretty exclusive in contracting with schools across the Iron Range, a number of schools across the Iron Range. We've been in business for 20 years, have never ever lost a contract, have very close, good working relationships with the schools. I'm here this afternoon to talk to you about striking language that was added to a law in 1991. And I know the history of the addition of the language, and I can explain objectively the reason that it should be removed. Would you like me to read the subdivision in the bill, or should I? No? Okay.
Just address the bill, please.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. The part that we would like to have deleted from the bill says that at the end of the fiscal year, a food service management company would have to eliminate a deficit in the school food service fund if a deficit occurred, and that would have to be done the year that the deficit occurred. Now, school districts who don't contract, like Grand Rapids, for example, where I am an employee, they have 3 years to make up a deficit. And sometime this afternoon, you'll hear from school food service colleagues of mine who will tell you how difficult it is to balance the school food service budget. And so if you have a year where you miss the target, that's not unusual. But it would put undue pressure on school districts and negatively affect students if contract companies were required to eliminate the deficit with the payment from the management company. There are a lot of reasons why you missed the mark. One year, several years ago, for the targeted breakfast program, we were 3/4 of the way through the school year, and then we were notified that there weren't enough reimbursements to cover the program. And that was quite a shock to all of us. But had a school been contracting and ran a deficit that year, which was totally out of their control, the law says that they would have to eliminate the deficit with the payment. Also, last year, nobody expected fuel prices to increase and spike the way that they had, higher than prices have spiked since 1975. That also happened with our corn, our flour, our rice. It is unfair, it is unusual to ask the contractor to eliminate the debt. Transportation, that's not typical in a transportation contract, but it is in the food service contract, and it really should come out. If a business contract company could see that they were not going to balance the budget, they could raise school lunch prices, they could artificially inflate school lunch prices so that they would never be faced with having to pay a debt that really could possibly have been out of their control if they exercised due diligence. If they were partway through the year and could see that they were going to miss the target of breaking even, they could reduce food quality, which would negatively affect all of the students. It really is a dangerous, bad provision in the bill, and it is not clearly written. We'd be doing a favor to agencies that we work with that cannot clearly answer the questions that we have about that provision. It's unclear as to whether it means a deficit at the end of the year or a deficit in the food service fund altogether. In summary, I would just like to say that, remind you, I'm looking at this objectively. I'm not promoting contracting food service. I'm not promoting non-contracting food service. I'm just saying it's a provision that needs your attention. I've talked to MDE. I've talked to the Attorney General's office. It's a perfect time for you to take a look at this. There hasn't been litigation over this. It hasn't cost school districts a lot of money. It hasn't negatively affected students yet, but I have opened up a can of worms by addressing this. And it is potentially bad for the paying students in Minnesota.
Ms. Podtester.
Oh, could I just say one thing, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
That the language was added in 1991, and the emphasis came from a fellow ranger. And I would just like to say that I'm hoping that it might be successfully deleted with the help of the fellow ranger.
Very good, Ms. Podtester. Members, do you have any questions, comments? Senator Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We're changing this. Deleting those three lines change at all the fact that the bill has to be paid at some time? We're not talking about a forgiveness thing here, are we?
No, not at all talking about forgiveness. I am all 100% about good management practices. I serve on the board for a bank. I serve on the board for a college. I believe in fiduciary responsibility. I don't believe that anyone, private or public, should be let off the hook for poor management or non-due diligence, but I do see, and I am objective about this because I do wear two hats, companies, organizations, entities should not be held responsible when it could be outside of their control. For example, I could go to my school board and say, would you raise prices next year? We're not going to balance the budget. And they could say, no, we're going to throw the referendum question and we don't want to get the community riled up. We're not going to raise school lunch prices. According to the letter of the law, and that's how the law is applied, a contractor could have to pay, even though they could see 1 year out that they were not going to balance the budget and the deficit could be caused by simply a school board declining the request to raise those prices. It is really dangerous. It's bad. It's a perfect time for you to look at it. I'm relying on your good judgment.
Ms. Pontesco, I'd like to ask you why the law was originally changed required procedure, this provision.
Why in 1991 it was originally added... I could refer that question to Elaine Keish, and I think that I think I will.
I think she's coming up in a bit, so we'll ask her when she comes up.
Okay.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have a question. It's a federal, we're talking about federal law here, correct?
No.
Testifier?
This, state or federal law.
Okay. Now,
we have to apply, Mr. Chair, Representative, we have to apply whichever the law is more stringent.
I just want to remind testifier and committee members to go through the chair so that we can
see some organization. Yes.
And Mr. Chair, just to follow up here, are we talking, which is more stringent, our state or is it the federal?
This is a state, Representative, this is a state provision that is in the state law.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, members? Seeing none, we will move to public testimony. It looks like Elaine Keith and Sherry Knutson, if they could come forward, please. And both testifiers, if you'll please introduce yourself on the tape before you give your testimony, and remember to speak to the chair during testimony and for questioning. And we're going to get to that question, Ms. Keith. So go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sherry Knutson, and I am the coordinator of student interest and services for Rochester Public Schools. I've been in this position for 10 years. I've been in school food service for almost 20 years, and I am presently the public policy chair of the Minnesota School Nutrition Association. And we oppose changing this language, and it's pretty simple, and I hope that you can concur with my thoughts on this. And basically, what will happen if a school district employs a management company, which right now in the state of Minnesota, there are about 65 schools that have their food service operations with management companies. They sign contracts. They're for profit. If a management company is not successful in the operation of their food service and leaves an outstanding debt in the food service fund, there's only really one place that's going to come to fruition to wipe that food service debt out, and that's the general fund. And I think we all know here today the challenges that schools have in their general fund operations, and that's probably the likelihood of what will happen is if a management company is not successful in what they promised the school district in the contract to operate their food service operations efficiently, that money is going to have to come from somewhere to supplant the food service fund. So therefore, we oppose it.
Thank you, Ms. Knutson. Any questions, members? Ms. Keith? Please introduce yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Elaine Keefe, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Nutrition Association. And I think actually Ms. Knutson did a pretty good job of explaining, you know, the reasoning behind this, the public policy reason. It was adopted in 1992. If you look at the bill, the language that's being deleted, the sentence that precedes it, page 2, line 11, it says, if a deficit in the food service fund exists at the end of a fiscal year, and the deficit is not eliminated by revenues from food service operations in the next fiscal year, so we're talking about 2 years of deficit, then the deficit must be eliminated by a permanent fund transfer from the general fund at the end of that second fiscal year. And so the sentence that is being proposed to be deleted or repealed would essentially have a parallel provision for food service management companies. And the thinking was, you know, if a food service management company comes in and makes a profit running the food service operation in a school district, they should not be permitted to leave the district with a deficit that then has to be eliminated by a transfer from the general fund. So that's the reason before it. It's really an accountability provision.
Thank you, Ms. Keith. Representative Gemmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is, I'm trying to get some information here because I have a situation in my, you know, one of my school districts where they have a surplus in their school lunch program. And they want to transfer money from the food service program into the general fund. Is that allowed?
Go ahead. It's my understanding that if there is a surplus in the food service fund, there's a number of measures that can be put into place. The general fund is allowed to charge back the food service fund for a number of different services, such as administrative, custodial, some supervision if the food service fund has run a fund balance in positive for a number of years. So there is certainly some provisions for doing some reversal of chargebacks from the food service fund back into the general fund. The operators of the food service fund could look at different measures to reduce that surplus, for example. Maybe reducing their lunch price could be something that they would consider.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Where would I be able to find a list of those things that would help a school district out? Could I get that from you? Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer. Actually, if you look at the bill, it's in current law. It's the very last paragraph on the second page, so beginning on line 2.21. Paragraph 8, if a surplus in the food service fund exists at the end of a fiscal year for 3 successive years, and it goes on to list the things that then can be charged to the food service fund that otherwise can't be. So there are additional chargebacks allowed, and that's the list right there.
Thank you.
And Ms. Keith, thank you for also answering my question earlier, because you already did that. And Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Keith, there are a number of other private service providers that schools typically contract with, especially the smaller schools, healthcare, payroll services, possibly transportation services. There's a lot of flexibility for public schools to make those kind of contracts. Are there, with any of these other, any at all, are there any provisions like the one for food services that would mandate that the private service provider fund backfill any deficit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I don't know for sure. My guess would be no, but I think that, you know, those other kinds of functions that you mentioned would not really be parallel, because those functions, payroll and transportation and so forth, don't bring in revenue to the district, so there's nothing to balance the expense with. In food service, the expectation is that the revenues you bring in are going to cover the expenses. I don't think that's true of those other functions.
Representative Dickens?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, maybe I can ask Mr. Strom if he's aware of any other similar provisions for other service providers.
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fiskins, as Ms. Keith has said, I'm not aware of another case where there's a required chargeback to the fund.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, any other questions? Hearing none, seeing none. Any other public testimony for or against? Citizen Pecorino, you want to have the last word here?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Camina.
Ms. Potts, you just have some things, and then I'll just wrap her up real quickly. Go ahead.
Ms. Potts-Tucker?
Mr. Chair, I would like to say that, first of all, when school districts are inclined to contact contract companies, it's because there is an outstanding debt that was created by whoever was there prior to the contract company, and that is the reason school districts contract. Myself, for example, I have I run 8 school districts, all 8 of them I've had almost a 20-year relationship with. Not a single one of them has a deficit fund balance. As a matter of fact, I hate to say this preceding the next testimony that you'll hear, one of them has over $250,000 fund balance. It's still nip and tuck and tough every year in spite of that, because you never know when you come upon hard times and really struggle. But the fact is, my company, for example, is a very good company, solid. They all have positive fund balance. It's not that provision in the law that has given me incentive to do a good job in the schools that I contract with. It is the contracts. The contracts are approved by the Department of Education, Food and Nutrition section. They have specific provisions in there to keep everything in check. It's not the unclear wording that I'm asking you to please, please look at and please strike. I do want to say that language is so unclear that, embarrassingly, Sherry and Elaine don't even understand it. The way they explained it to you is not correct. I did speak with the Department of Education and had their opinion. I spoke with the Attorney General's office and have their opinion, not a written opinion. It was just over the telephone with an individual, if I have to mention his name, I will, who gave me clarity, because it is unclear, it's confusing. It's not the second year that the contractor would be required to pay. It's the first year. Elaine said it was the second, and it's parallel. But that is not correct. All part of the reason this is very dangerous, it's potentially damaging. It needs your attention. And I would just like to say that while I have school lunch programs that are operating in the black, that's partly why this is such a perfect time to come before you and speak to that very dangerous wording in the law. It was not the intent. It's not used regularly. As a matter of fact, they couldn't think of the time it was used. So it's not that language that's keeping people in check. Then, finally, I'd like to say that the school districts I work with have the lowest lunch prices in the entire state.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Virginia School District, the Mount Lion School District, and the Everest-Gilbert School District, which I represent, contract with Ms. Potts' company, and all of you know that I'm probably one of the strongest union people in the Minnesota legislature. But quite a few years ago, a couple decades ago almost, they were running deficits, and they contracted with Ms. Potts' firm. And what I'm afraid of, and when the bill was explained to me, you know, and to the point about the union, my daughter is a business agent for AFSCME Council 65, and I think she negotiates against Pauling school districts and two of them that employ union members who do the food service. But be that as it may, just let me say this. I think what will happen here, and the fear is that, you know, it's going to be the kids that are going to end up paying. And as Mr. Strom pointed out in Representative Biskins, there isn't any other place like this where you run in a contract where it was in law. I kind of know the background of this a little bit. I don't want to discuss it here, but for those of you that might be curious, I can give you a little more information on, I think, why this was put in law in the first place. So,
thank you.
Band members, I appreciate just your consideration in moving it along and further discussion later. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Covina. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I apologize that I was late to the meeting today, and maybe this question has already been asked. The law has been in place since 1992, and why are we looking at it now? Is there a specific reason that I missed, and I apologize if I missed it?
Can you quickly, we've already gone over that, but can you quickly, but can, that's okay, Representative, can you, Ms. Potester, explain that again, please, quickly?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I can. I had said I'm aware that I'm opening up a can of worms. This is a provision in the law that's blown under the radar. School districts that are happy with their contractors, and if you look at the list of contractors, certain contractors have been in certain schools for ever. And so there must be something that they like about that side of business or that particular company. And they don't want, the school districts do not want to enforce that provision in the law. The contractors don't want to pay, especially when it could potentially be a deficit not caused by them. Right now, every year I think about talking about this publicly, and this year it's just not right. It is not right for students to potentially suffer the effects of having this law enforced, I guess.
Or be ignored, Mr.
Or be ignored. Well, every single thing we do in the schools that I work with, they spin like a top. Hibbing just had a state review yesterday. The person, just kudos to the director who's sitting in the back of the room, who said she has never or not often seen reviews as impeccable as Tanya Cunningham in the Hibbing Public Schools. That's the way we do business. I brought it up. It was my conscience.
Thank you, Ms. Pontesco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome, Representative Dempsey. Anything further, members? Seeing none, hearing none. Thank you for the testimony. The bill will be made over possible inclusion of the Andres K-12 finance bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I'm looking for a motion to approve the minutes of Wednesday, February 25th. Representative Garofalo moves the minutes of February 25th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes of February 25th are approved. We'll move on to the next testimony, the next bill. Representative Benson's bill, and he is lucky to have designated hitter, Representative Rude, in today. Not pinch hitter, designated hitter. There's a difference, Representative Rude. And he's lucky. Representative Benson, we were informed, just so you know, that he was under doctor's orders that he could not drive in this weather because if he got an accident and the bird went off, it would kill him. So he chose, that's absolutely what the doctor has told him. So he wanted to come. We determined that he shouldn't, probably.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, there's absolutely no truth to the rumor that Marty Seifert dispatched the car to get him. I just want to make sure that is...
Thank you, Representative Groffman. Representative Rude, a pleasure to have him before us. You're not part of the committee. Let me see. You're not part of the committee with you. So I will move this bill. We laid over the possible inclusion on this K-12 bill. Representative Rude, would you like to proceed with the testimony?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to...
Representative, excuse me, I forgot members that came in a little late. We do have some information now. We're talking about school lunches and food all day today, and we do have a school lunch program and spreadsheets in your packets of information for you, so please refer to that as well. Excuse me, Representative, I'm sorry. Go ahead and with House File 252.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be before this committee. I was a member of this committee a couple years ago under Chair Biskin, so it's fun to be back before you. As the Chair said, I'm here for Representative Benson. He does feel very passionately about this bill, and I do want to let you all know that he's doing very well, though he did have a doctor's appointment for his post-op visit and was instructed not to drive today. As you may all know, there's a whiteout out there. There's a blizzard going on. So it is my pleasure to be before you. This bill increases school lunch aid from 12 cents per lunch to 15 cents per lunch. With that, I'm going to turn it over to the testifiers. Now, I think they may know this bill more in depth than I do, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Representative, that's great. And set the fires again if you'll just remember. Oh, you brought us lunch. That's wonderful. Thank you very much. If you'll introduce yourself for the tape, each of you, please, and remember to speak to the chair as we dialogue here in testimony. So, Ms. Keefe, are you going first, or Ms. Knutson?
I am.
Ms. Keefe, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, again, I'm Elaine Keefe, representing the Minnesota School Nutrition Association. And the members of our association are school nutrition directors, their cooks, their cafeteria servers, and dietitians. And they work very, very hard to provide meals to Minnesota school children that are nutritious, that are low in cost, and that are appealing to the students. And believe me, that's a difficult balancing act. The vast majority of school districts cannot cover the cost of a school lunch through the traditional combination of student payments, federal funding, and state funding. According to the Minnesota Department of Education, last school year we lost an average of 37 cents for every lunch that we served. And so how do we make that up? Well, most school districts make up that gap by selling a la carte items, individual food items, and some of the most popular items, unfortunately, which bring in the most revenue are bags of chips and things like that, which are not the most nutritious items. And so we're asking you to help us make ends meet and improve our nutritional offerings by providing us with an additional 3 cents per lunch. And that additional funding will help us to reduce our dependence on those a la carte sales and at the same time enable us to continue to provide the healthier foods that are costlier, like fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains. It's been well documented in various studies that children who eat school lunch consume more vegetables and more milk and less sugar than students who don't eat school lunch. You have in your packets a number of newspaper articles that we've reprinted talking about the efforts schools are making to provide healthier food choices. They have headlines like New Frontiers in the Lunchroom, School Lunches Healthier, Students Bite Into Healthful Foods at Challenger Elementary School, and so forth. We're working very, very hard at this, but we really could use your help. And I'm going to turn the microphone over to Ms. Knutson now.
Thank you, Ms. Keefe. Ms. Knutson, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sherry Knutson, and I'm the coordinator of school nutrition services for Rochester Public Schools and the public policy chair for Minnesota School Nutrition Association. The 2,700 plus members of the Minnesota School Nutrition Association, thank you for your continued support of our program. Last year in Minnesota, we served 94 million school lunches to children in the state. It is true, we serve education daily, but it's much harder for those of us as operators to serve children the nutritious foods that they need each day to perform well in school. Due to wellness policy initiatives and the obesity crisis that we've all heard of, there's a greater emphasis on preparing lower-fat entrees, increasing the frequency of fresh fruits and vegetables, and serving more whole grains to students. I brought several lunch trays with me this afternoon just to show you some examples of some of the items that all of us as operators are trying to put in front of children every day here. And it's really probably quite a switch from what some of you might remember as mashed potatoes and gravy with that nice hamburger gravy and some of that chicken that we used to serve and some of those really scratch prepared meals that if you remember your favorite lunch meal, I think it's changed dramatically. And some examples of that are these. For example, we serve a entree salad every day in our elementary, so the students can go through the line if they don't want to have the item that's the hot entree for the day, for example, they can choose to have a little salad like that. They can change the lettuce and the protein for the day. We might subsidize it with a little bit of yogurt, little granola yogurt cafe, for example, and of course they're going to get fruit and milk. On this tray, an example of trying to get more whole grains into student lunch meals, putting a turkey cheese sandwich on a whole wheat bread, served with a spinach lettuce salad and some orange wedges. I think this is the type of lunch that we want you to start thinking is what we're serving as a typical lunch in Minnesota today and not what we might remember what we had years ago. Unfortunately, there are higher costs involved in serving lunches like this. School nutrition directors report milk on average has increased 14%, fruits and vegetables 13%, meat and meat alternatives 11% on average, and some of the bread products that we're serving have increased about 15%. School nutrition programs throughout the United States are witnessing an increase in participation as a result of this economic recession. Across our state of Minnesota, many schools are seeing a percentage of free and reduced students increase. I can share with you personal data from Rochester that in the same time period from November to February 24th, we approved 346 applications, whereas the same time frame last year, we approved 122. So it's about a 300% increase in just 3 months this year compared to last year in the number of families that are applying for free and reduced meal benefits. A lot of these families are first-time ever families that are approaching our programs to become free or reduced. As the number of free and reduced meals shift upward, the number of paid meals shift downward, which actually poses a problem for us as operators because of that ratio imbalance. We can actually, with the paid meals, try to charge more of the actual cost of the meal with the paid meal. But with reimbursement from the state and federal government for the free and reduced meals, we're not able to do that. Some school directors, food service directors, are reporting that even students that are on paid meals don't have enough money to eat every day during the week. Mom and dad are only giving them money to maybe eat twice a week because there just isn't enough household money to spare. If we look at the Minnesota Department of Education's information on how much does it cost to put out a school lunch, this year, according to preliminary data from the UFARS numbers, the cost to put out a school lunch reporting for last year's information is $2.99. The previous year in 06-07, it was $2.66. So it's about 30 cents difference, 30 cent increase in just one school year. If you look at the funding that we get for school meals, $2.57 from the federal government and 12 cents from the state, $2.69, the cost is $2.99. It's 30 cents short. Simply put, we're stretching the food dollar as much as we can. And simply put, it's becoming almost impossible to work this magic to try to put these types of foods in front of children every day. School lunches are probably more important now with the economic state of the nation. Families are overextended financially with income covering food, shelter, and transportation, with little money left over to give the kids for their lunch at school. We all know that proper nutrition is important to children's development, and it's really important that we can afford to feed these kids at school so that they can reach their potential. It teaches them lifelong eating habits to be able to eat lunch at school and to enjoy a meal such as this. When it comes to feeding children, it can be unacceptable for a growing demand for food to receive no additional resources to help resolve the problems that we're incurring. I'm asking you to support this increase of 3 cents. Our business is all about pennies. It doesn't seem like a whole lot of money. I know 3 cents doesn't seem like a whole lot, but to us it is. It will help us feed your children and your neighbor's children and all the children in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Commission. Members, you're going to go to questions. And also hear from other public testimony if there is any. I right off the top of my head, though, I have two questions. You mentioned how much, you know, per meal was the last couple of years or whatever. How much was hamburger gravy? You meant that? That was one of my favorite. Anyhow, you know, like, you just heard testimony in the bill before this. We just heard testimony in the bill before this about one school district that had I thought you said $250,000 reserve fund balance in their food supply account. Is that, can you share with us, share with me, educate me on districts, reserve balances in their food accounts? Is that uncommon? Is that common? Can you know those statistics?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think it would be very frugal for food service operators to have a positive fund balance. We are meant to be nonprofit. But I'll share the reason why. It's very, very positive for food service operations to have a positive fund balance. And it's because you can spend that money over the profit line to replenish your depreciated equipment. So therefore, you can take your food service funds and you can buy a new dishwasher, you can buy a new oven, you can buy whatever needed. You don't have to go and request money to be taken out of the capital outlay fund or a facility fund. So it's very good to be sitting on that right side of the line to have money in your food service account to be able to replenish depreciated equipment.
Thank you, Ms. Commissioner. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My husband was here. He'd want to know what happened to the toasty dogs that he used to love when he was in the car. I got a full report on that. I don't know about the toasty dogs. He begged me to see if I could learn how to make some.
Mr. Chair.
And to that point, I actually have a school cookbook from the Bloomington Public Schools.
Oh,
so I might have that recipe.
Well, do you want to do that, please?
That would be good.
Thank goodness we have that taken care of now.
I have to ask this question. You may or may not be aware about Senator Bonhoff's initiative on the shared services, and I've sat in several times in those meetings. We had a very long testimony by one of the food service people and a lot of money was saved through that. Could you just address that for me, please, with that on the horizon possibly being put into law? We don't know yet, obviously, but would like to hear your own input on that as food service people. Thank you.
Mr. Lipson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Just as a response to the toasty dogs, we probably still serve them in some shape or form, but they're probably not as attractive as far as they're probably whole grain and don't have much fat in them, but they're probably still there in some shape or form. But to try to answer the question of the Minnesota Buying Group, this is an initiative that was originally started about 5 years ago through the Anoka Hennepin School District. And right now to date, they have in the high 70s number of school districts that are participating in the buying group. We are a member of that buying group. We just joined last year. It does take a joint powers agreement from your school board in order to join this particular group. But what it is simply, it's a way to save money. You pool your resources based on volume. So you agree that you're going to serve a certain type or brand of a pizza or a chicken patty, and then the members of the buying group are pooling their volume and going direct to the manufacturer, whether it be a Tyson, a Swan, General Mills, and trying to secure a better price direct from the manufacturer. And that's how they're able to save some money. It's a very, very, I think, encouraging endeavor that's out there for school districts, whether it be a small school district, a charter school district, a large school district, to really look at the items on that list and whether they could potentially save some dollars.
Thank you, Ms. Knudsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dempsey. We got one more question, but I want to see if there's anybody in the general audience that want to testify to this bill for or against this bill. Okay, that's good to know. Representative Detmer?
Mr. Chair, and do you have any information or data out there on how many school districts are running with a surplus in the school lunch program versus those that are really struggling that would really benefit from this 3-cent increase? Is there a lot of districts running surplus?
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, I don't have those numbers with me, but I'm sure that we can get them from the Department of Education. They keep pretty good statistics. I would say that, as I said, we lose money on every lunch, standard lunch that we serve. We make that up by selling a la carte items. We'd like to reduce our dependence on a la carte and be able to continue to provide, the costlier fresh fruits and vegetables and so forth. In terms of fund balances, we can get to that information, though. That's sort of a separate issue from this. It really depends on how successful they are at managing those other things.
Thank you, Ms. Key.
Thank you. I'd like to see that.
Yeah. So, Ms. Key, you'll get us that information, please. Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments, members? Senator Moon?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. To Mr. Detmer's question, I think some districts like Anoka Hennepin occasionally run a temporary balance surplus, and it's just for the purpose that you cited, it's to buy equipment. And so they'll have a temporary surplus, but normally they don't do that, and it's only to put it in reserve to purchase rather expensive equipment.
Thank you, Representative Moon. Anything else, members?
Just a brief
reference, those of us who sit on taxes had a presentation by the Budget Trends Study Commission, and one of the recommendations from that commission was that every unit of government have larger fund balances to fall back on. So at points when the relationship between the state and whatever other jurisdiction is fraying, as it is between our cities and state and our school district and state, they have something more to run on. And there's a tension there, but the latest wisdom from the folks at the Green Eye Shades is that everybody should be having a larger fund balance to carry forward.
Good comment, Danny. Thank you. Any other members? Okay, Representative Wood, we'll move this over for possible inclusion on the State 12 bill. Thank you for a designated meeting today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Representative Wilson, it looks like you're up. With House File 784. Are you leaving the food for us? Oh, thank you very much. Members, feel free to help yourself, I guess. I don't think there's any corn dogs or any of those corny dogs up there, Representative Ducky.
It doesn't look like
I get the hamburger gravy, please. Me and Representative Demo share that. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
784, is this the first time you presented?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair, and I understand that there is a precedent. I didn't know about it until I was coming down the stairs that this was started by Representative Garofalo. And that he buys something for
Mr. Chairman,
present? Is that
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newton, is this your first time presenting a bill to the committee?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newton, did you bring treats for the committee?
And Mr. Chair, that was the point I was
Representative Newton, yes.
We have a lot of spoons.
Representative Danny, move to table. Representative Newton, would you like to move your bills to get it before the committee before you get any more deeper trouble, Representative Newton?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 784.
Okay, for possible inclusion on this K-12 finance bill, Representative Newton, you will look at the bill for possible inclusion on this K-12 finance bill, and if you'll present, you have three testifiers that you claim.
Two testifiers.
Okay, and testifiers, just to remind you, if you'll introduce yourself, please, as you give your testimony and work through your chair.
Yeah.
With testimony, with questions and comments. Representative Newton, if you want to proceed with your bill, House File 784.
Yes, Mr. Chair. What this bill does essentially is it changes the reduced price lunch to the same as free lunch. It adds 40 cents to the reduced price lunch, and so that the students who are currently receiving reduced price lunch don't have to pay for it.
Okay, Representative Newton. Testifiers.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jessica Webster. I'm with Legal Aid. Legal Aid represents low-income families across the state. And I'm here really to present the flip side of what you just heard from our friends at the School Nutrition Association. The problem is that a growing number of families and kids can't pay for reduced price lunch right now. And when I'm talking about reduced price lunch, you know, free lunch, we're talking about kids below 130% of poverty. It's about, you know, can be about $22,000-$23,000 for a family, a mom with two kids. So reduced price lunch, we're talking about kids that pay that 40 cents per lunch. And so that could be families between $23,000 and $33,000 a year. And what this means is that if your dad sends you to school and hasn't paid for your lunch, these are not the lunches typically that you're going to receive. You could possibly be turned away from the lunch counter when you're up there. You could have a tray and be turned away. There are a lot of schools that are trying not to do that. Some schools do absorb that cost initially, but as you heard, they're telling us they can't absorb the cost of this lunch right here anymore. So if a child is not turned away, they might be given a cheese sandwich, they might be given a peanut butter sandwich, and a carton of milk. And I think that if you think about what it's like to be 13 and be easily identified as the kid with the cheese sandwich and the carton of milk because your mom didn't pay your bill and you're identified immediately as a poor child, there's definitely a heavy stigma that comes along with that. So we're very concerned not only about the kids that are turned away, the kids that are given a less nutritious meal, but also just about kids that are self-selecting out because they're terrified that they're going to go up to the front of the line. There's not going to be money in their account. The school lunch staffer is going to ask them why there's not money in their account, why you need to put more money in your account, and that's going to be embarrassing for them. So we have kids that we know are skipping lunch or just self-selecting out of the school lunch program. Legal aid, we know that this represents new spending in a tough budget year, but I think where we're at is we know that for absolutely every innovation and every investment that's going to be made by this committee and other committees in education, if you have a hungry kid, hungry kids aren't very good at learning. There's walls that go up, and there's barriers and impediments to learning if you're a hungry child, and so that's why we're so concerned about this issue. One of the testifiers that couldn't be here today, Allison Bradford, represents Anoka Hennepin School District, and she was going to pass along that of the 3,200 kids that qualify for reduced price lunch in Anoka Hennepin right now, 500 kids are unable to keep up, or 500 families are unable to keep up with that $2 a week. And what we know this does mean for some school districts are some school districts are using collection agencies to go after unpaid lunch debts because school lunch programs are supposed to be self-sustaining and self-sufficient, and they can't be running in the red. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Lemster. And we've got a couple questions. We're going to go to the next testifier, and then we'll come back to questions, members. Would you please identify yourself on the tape? And
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susan Richardson, and I am the dietitian and also the director of the Roseville School Nutrition Program. And I am here to testify to what happens to those children who do not qualify for the free meals. In the last 25 years since I've been doing my job, I've been at Roseville for 7 years, I have never seen such an influx of children, families that need to fill out an application, which to many families is somewhat of a demeaning prospect. I mean, the fact that they've lost their jobs and they're so desperate for food that they fill out the application, send it in, they have to put down what their income is for us to approve it. And the students that qualify for free, it's easy. But there are families who will apply for meals, and they just miss the cutoff for getting those free meals. The income guidelines are based on gross income, so we don't get net income levels from the families. We have to take their gross. I've had phone calls from parents who have either lost their jobs, they're on chemo, they can't work, and they can't afford the 40 cents a day for that reduced meal. In Roseville alone, we have approximately 6,500 students that are enrolled. Of that 6,500, to this day, we now have 1,800 families that qualify for free meals, and we have 500 who qualify for reduced. I've had parents call me on the phone. This year, I get calls at least once a week because they have medical bills that are in the thousands. Many families have children who have medical problems that they weren't planning on. They have health insurance, but yet they still have to put out $1,000 for just the medical. And so when we qualify these students, we aren't qualifying them based on the net income. There's no adjustment made for how much they have to pay in medical bills or the fact that the father has just lost his job and now they're living on one income. And I brought the income guidelines with me, and just imagine, your family of four, so your mom, dad, you have two children. If you make $27,000, you'll be approved for free. If you make $27,561, you'll be approved for reduced. If you make more than $39,000, you can't even get the reduced. I live alone. My kids are grown up. My grandchildren are being taken care of by my kids. And I live pretty frugally, and I make a lot more than $40,000. We have families that are families of eight, and they have to make it on $46,000 a year. So what happens is that these children come to school, and they eat breakfast. If they're lucky and they get the 40 cents to eat lunch, they go home, and oftentimes they go home and there's no food in the house. So they miss dinner or whatever snacks they have in the household. I've had, just recently, a mother who came in to see me because she had heard that, you know, I was approachable. And I was in a meeting, and my secretary told her that I wouldn't be available for a couple hours. And she was in tears and said, I don't care how long I have to wait. I'm going to wait for Ms. Richardson until I can see her. And so my secretary came and got me out of the meeting, and I walk in and bring her into the office. Her husband has left her and the two children with, of course, no income, and she's desperate, and she was crying in my office. And, you know, how do you say no to someone who is so desperate that they forget all pride and come in and ask a total stranger, please, we need help? So we have 500 students who are on that reduced meal, and probably three-fourths of them will eat because they can come up with the 40 cents, and the rest of them don't. Now, in the elementary schools, we've just recently gone to the PTAs and begged for money. We have a fund of $500 in each of the elementaries in Roseville. We have the cashiers and the principal on task so that if they know there's a family having trouble, we will put money in from that PTA. We'll go back to the PTA and ask for more money so that we don't have to take meals away from kids, or worse yet, have the child come to school and know they're not going to get a lunch. So in summary, I plead with you, our economy is not doing so well, this is not news, but I am asking for that extra money so that we don't have to charge 40 cents a day.
Thank you for your testimony. It's good for us to hear personal stories like that, and it's very meaningful. Thank you very much. Representative Newton, you wanted to say something.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add to what Ms. Richardson has said, and it doesn't have to do with food. These same families, for many of you in the school district, you know, we've had to cut bus transportation, so families are now paying for buses. Same thing for extracurriculars. Our extracurriculars in Anoka Hennepin run almost $360. We give a break for kids on reduced lunch, but it's maybe half. So they've got to pay $180. They might have to pay another $200 to ride the bus. These things just keep building for these families, and I know of personal cases where kids are buying lunch for other kids so that they don't have to go through the embarrassment of saying we don't have the funds.
Thank you, Representative Newton. Representative Dixon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would just direct this to Madam Chair. I think we do have a problem with the fiscal note that's in front of us on this bill. That's from the testimony. If I go to page 2 on the fiscal note, the assumptions, the very first sentence on the assumptions is that the number of school lunches served would not change. However, according to the testifier, I think the quote was three-quarters eat lunch, the rest don't. Right? So in making this change, I think there's a huge, we're adding another large group of kids. Also, I noticed the fiscal note does not address if this would encourage more families to sign up for free and reduced lunch, the ripple effect on to compensatory revenue also kicks in. So I think this fiscal note does have to be examined as this, we lay this bill over and consider it for possible inclusion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. Any response? Okay, Representative Detmer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, you know, we talked about surpluses that schools carry many times in those food service programs. Can a school themselves provide, using the surplus money, to lower prices for the these lunches?
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, you know, I don't really have the answer to that. I know that they do try to save when they can in things like the shared purchases and things. But as Ms. Richardson said, what generally happens is that the schools have informed the people that work in the lunchrooms to make sure that the children get something. And it's usually, as you say, a cheese sandwich and milk. As to whether or not they could allow for that, I'm just not sure. I think if that was the case, we probably wouldn't have to be here asking for the state to provide the funds.
Would Ms. Richardson, the Roseville director, would you know that answer?
Yes, Richardson. Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. When there is a surplus, which in this day and age is harder and harder to attain, we can actually lower the cost of the meal to the full-pay student. And when we have students that leave the school district, we have a computerized system, and students are supposed to put their money into the account as a prepaid account, and so then as they come through the line, that is then deducted off of their balance. There are many full-pay student families who will either graduate from high school or they just leave the district and they don't bother to take money out. And we do make an effort to return that, but most of the time we'll end up at the end of our school year with at least a $3,000 or $4,000 plus in that area. And so we have taken that money and put it into that PTA account for each of the buildings so that we can at least get those kids to eat that are not eating or can't keep their accounts in the positive. So in a way, yes, I'm answering your question, yes, we can take that money and feed it back in.
Thank you, Ms. Richardson.
And Mr. Chairman, I think given the situation that we're in today, you know, the districts are carrying large surpluses in their food service programs. They should really consider, you know, putting that back into the food service for the students. I know with the snacks and things that they're selling after school and so forth, and there's big money in schools right now. They have their beverage machines and everything like that. Maybe we should be looking at encouraging school districts to be using that to reduce the school lunches if the state can't help out in this situation.
Thank you. Mr. Lee, did you want to comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I would love to. We received a federal mandate for the wellness, to implement wellness policies in our school district. In Roseville, for instance, we were serving a la carte to the elementary students. In other words, we would put out extra cups of fruit and you know, oatmeal cookies that were, you know, healthy cookies. And because of the wellness policy, we took out all the a la carte in the elementaries, which was a stream of revenues. We're under a great deal of pressure now to serve meals that are low in fat, and we still have a calorie level to maintain, but we are fighting obesity as well as the rest of the country. And so to answer your question, it is a struggle for school districts to even break even, sorry about that. It is rare to have a school district nutrition program that has so much money they don't know what to do with it. Roseville, we are in a positive. When I started in Roseville 7 years ago, I walked in on negative balance. They were in the red for a couple of years before we could bring them around. So it's not the norm to have a $250,000 surplus.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Gravin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if I could ask Mr. Strom or Ms. Keefe or anybody at the testifying table, when we started subsidizing the school lunches for the students who are not free and reduced lunch, that 12 cents. And given that we have such a growing problem of not paying for the reduced lunch students or the free lunch, I guess the reduced lunch students, to the point that we have this bill of Representative Newton's, and given our deficit situation, and we're not going to be probably adding any bills that cost any money anytime soon this year, what about rearranging the money that the state does pay for school lunches to put more into reduced lunch students but less for those who are paying the full price and obviously some leaving the district without bothering to collect the money, so maybe don't need it as much?
So, Ms. Richardson?
Or Ms. Keefe or Mr. Strom. If they don't know.
Ms. Keefe, could you respond to that, please? And just because you move the table, would you just please identify yourself?
Mr. Chair and Representative Briley, Elaine Keefe with the Minnesota School Nutrition Association. State funding for school lunch began in the early 80s when the federal government required the state to provide a map. And initially, the state funding was provided only for the paying students. There was no state funding, yes, for the free reduced. And the rationale, I'm told at the time, was that the federal funding was sufficient back then to cover the cost of the free and reduced price meals, and so the money was distributed to school districts based on the number of students that they had. 1991 was the first year that the School Nutrition Association was, you know, represented at the legislature, and I've been with them from the beginning. And that was the year when we had the funding rearranged so that funding was provided based on all three categories of meals.
Thank you, Ms. Keith. President Glennon?
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Keith, so does your organization have any position, as I'm assuming is the federal match still required, and does it have to be 12 cents? And what would you think with your organization or any, Ms. Richardson, of having us rearrange current funding?
Ms. Keith?
Mr. Chair and Representative Freiling, we haven't discussed rearranging the current funding, and so, you know, we don't have a current position. I think our public policy committee would have to discuss that as a possibility. And you haven't, there was another part to your question, and I can't remember what it was.
I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, Ms.
Representative,
about the federal match being still required.
Mr. Chair and Representative Freiling, the federal match is a flat dollar amount. It's $4.6 million per year, and to my knowledge, that hasn't been changed. It's been the same since the early 80s, and so it's not really a factor at this point. We're well above that level. It's not a per-meal amount.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Freiling? Maybe, could you get back to your organization and let us know what might be said? I'd like to hear Ms. Richardson's opinion.
Ms. Richardson.
In regards to the reduced meal, rather than rearranging that amount that we're getting in, what we're asking for is for a small group of children, the reduced count as opposed to the free.
Maybe I didn't make my question clear. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the ones that are paying the full price. Right now they're subsidized 12 cents a meal.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking if in hard times maybe their families could afford to pay 12 cents more so that the ones who aren't getting lunch at all could get a lunch, the reduced lunch kids.
I understand the question now. Yes. It would be great to have more funding for those full-pay kids because those, we have a lot of families that fall in the cracks.
But she's going to have to take money from the full-pay kids and give them to
In a way, they're already doing that. When they're buying a la carte items, that revenue is what is helping to support our program. So in a way, they are already funding the lunch for the free and reduced. Sorry, I completely misunderstood.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll look forward to Ms. Keith's official
position. Okay. Thank you. Representative Fulton.
Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank Mr. Newton for bringing this before us and making us aware, all of us aware. These kids fly under the radar, and I teach 7th and 8th graders who would rather die than walk through that line and get that cheese sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
It's mortifying. They hang out in my room where I have a big drawer full of popcorn and cereal bars and peanut butter and crackers that comes out of my deep pockets. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fulton.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative,
I didn't want to hear that after we did the health and wellness policy in Anoka Hennepin and forbid any candy or cookies or anything in the teacher's room.
You didn't hear that.
I hear
that. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think you mentioned, Ms. Jacobson, that the reduced lunches were, what, about 40 cents a piece? Is that correct?
What's the difference?
Just for curiosity, what do the full meal lunches cost in your school?
We charge our elementary students $2.25, and we charge our secondaries $2.65, and we charge our adult staff $3.65, and then we charge the reduced 40 cents. And, of course, the free students don't pay anything at all. And we have an extensive a la carte program at a high school and a middle school, which helps to fund those meals that we are producing.
My point again, and you kind of touched on this, that those that fall just above the cutoff for the full price meals or the reduced meals, there's another group there that having to pay store price, it could be just as tough for them as the reduced mm-hmm. also.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Representative Biskins. Pass. Members, any other questions? Is there anybody in the audience that would care to testify for or against this bill? All right. Representative Moody, you have the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for not knowing the Garofalo rule before coming down here. I was informed of it. There's another day coming, so thank you very much.
Representative Newton removed his motion to lay over the House File 784, possible inclusion in a on the School 12 Finance Bill. Members, before we dismiss, I want to remind all of you tomorrow that there is a policy issues in special education finance at the Harold Sasson Building, 600 North Robert Street, from 9 to 11. And there are going to be shuttles leaving the State Office Building. Check your emails. Here we are. From the State Office at 10:40. I'm not sure if this is right. Here it is, 8:30. Oh, okay. 8:25, 8:40, 8:55, and 9:25. So if you can, please attend. I know I've got a committee that I've got to testify, and I'm going to be there after that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Demmer.
I just got word from my wife that Fairfax School District has dismissed early today because of a snowstorm, and I know there's supposed to be a listening session tonight in Forest Lake. I'm just wondering what the situation is.
Representative Demmer, I'd like to know that too, because I'm going to be there also.
Right. You're at my place if you want.
Thank you very much. Do you know, Representative Ryan, have they talked about it all?
A lot of activities have been...
I don't know about the one in Forest Lake, but I know that another one, some staff was leaving earlier to get there, so I'm not sure. I would have your staff check with the leadership corner.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or announcements, members? The committee, K-12 Finance, is adjourned.